This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. We're going to do the show a little bit differently today because we got some more serious topics. I think we're going to dive into the NFL, how they go forward, given the current state of the DeMar Hamlin tragedy, I guess is the best way to put it. And from there, we're going to talk about Dana White's domestic violence incident with his wife in Mexico. So I guess, Charlie, welcome to the show, buddy. Where do you want to start? I feel like we should, I guess I shouldn't ask you, I should tell you because it's my show or whatever. Let's start with the football stuff. As of now, I guess we should give a time of date. It's Wednesday, January 4th at 3:22. Nothing's really changed. I know we had some relatively good news this morning. The amount of oxygen that DeMar Hamlin was being given went down, I think, to 50%. So that's like a positive sign. I think that's the only bit of update we have. We also got the memo from Roger Goodell saying that things would go forward with week 18 as usual, but we have no update on what they're going to do about the Bills-Bengals game where Hamlin was hurt.
So there are a million ways that this can go and this can proceed with the NFL. And I don't want to sound callous in the fact that we're going to discuss them, but that's also what we do beyond that. And we're obviously still thinking about DeMar Hamlin and how his health is the priority. But there are several questions that come out of this that I'm fascinated to know what you think they should do logistically, morally, and what you would do if you were in the room as a union leader. And the first one, and I think we should start with this question, is in 2001, they postponed the league for a week and then just cut out a week before the Super Bowl. Do you think that's a path that the NFL should consider going down, knowing that the hardest thing for these leagues is to press pause, and they made that hard decision on Monday night already?
Yeah, so 2001 was 9/11, mm-hmm. and yeah, that was an enormous event. And like, so these like monoculture like events that it feels like all of America actually cares about at the same time, they seem so infrequent these days. I don't know if they were more frequent in the past, but this is certainly one of them. And it's one of those few times where the NFL has a lot of people's attention, and we think it has everyone's attention because we live in this world. But right now it actually kind of has everyone in the country's attention. So I think how they handle this going forward will have an impact. So I think the first thing that we start with is you got to kind of work in the way I would structure this if I was in charge, is you work in circles starting at the center of this particular crisis. And you have different teams working on the bigger kind of concentric circles. So the first one is DeMar Hamlin. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't do anything, or you should do everything that you can to help him. And you shouldn't do anything that is going to hurt him. And then from there, it's to his close family. And then from there, it's his team. And then it's the Bengals and the broader league. So starting with DeMar Hamlin, I think the way the schedule plays out is irrelevant.
Yeah.
So I, as uncomfortable as it is, I think, to talk about all that stuff, I don't feel terribly like unethical or immoral trying to make a plan for that, because playing football is not going to like improve or degrade his condition.
Right.
So I think getting that out the way. And then so the next thing is like his family's feelings and mm-hmm. and how this impacts them. That's a conversation that you need to have. And I don't know, and weigh the risk and rewards of how you want to impact them, because you don't want to be you don't want to exacerbate anybody's pain mm-hmm. in that situation. However, this, well, I guess it's not however, I think, period, then assuming that playing football is not going to do some great damage to them, you then look at the Bills. And I think this is where it actually gets really, really thorny and complicated, because you don't want to make the Bills, you don't want to punish the Bills for having a tragedy take place, which is what's going to end up happening. And that's the thing. There's no scenario that I have imagined, and I've talked about this morning on Get Up, and I've obviously thought about it a bunch, but there really is no scenario that does not negatively impact the Bills and the Bengals, for that matter, because mm-hmm. It's too late to have the game this week. So they're all going to play. And right now the Bills, yeah, that's another thing. Put a bookmark in this. We'll come back to to this discussion. It's like just the Bills game, preparing for a game this week against the Patriots. But we'll put a bookmark in that. But the potential outcomes: declare the game a no contest and mm-hmm. just wipe it off, and the Bills and the Bengals play one less game than everyone else. You just determine seeding based on win percentage. The Chiefs likely win against the Raiders, and then the Chiefs get the number one seed, and the Bills have the number one seed taken from them because their safety's heart stopped on the field.
Right. And they would be 13-3, presumably, if they beat the Patriots. The Chiefs would be 14-3. Presumably, the Bengals would be 12-4.
Right.
All the three teams that play for the number one seed.
Yeah. And then for the Bengals, the situation is a little bit different. They mm-hmm. don't have a shot at the number one seed, which they would have had they had the lead over the Bills and they beat the Chiefs. And they had a shot at the number one seed, but now that's out the window if this game is thrown out. Mm-hmm. But the Bengals, it kind of helps them when it comes to winning their division, and that now the Ravens can't have a better win percentage than them in their division. But if they were to lose to, if the Bengals lost to the Bills, then the Ravens could have beaten the Bengals and taken over that spot. But okay, so the one scenario is you throw the game out. The other scenario is you push everything back 1 week, and then the Bills and the Bengals play their game in an isolated week by themselves. That levels the playing field as far as number of games is concerned, but it also affords everyone else in the league a bye. And if the Bills end up losing that game, they don't have a bye and they're still impacted negatively. So, and then we have 2 weeks between the Super Bowl this year, right? I think that's what mm-hmm. I've been hearing. So there's room to push it back and all that stuff. But I think as much as I've thought about all this, there's no way to do this fairly at this point in the season, because it's not like the COVID year where everybody was dealing with stuff. And I think the best case scenario, or what I would probably advocate for, is no contest. Throw the game out. They play less games. The Chiefs more than likely get the number one seed, and you go forward. What do you think?
I completely agree. And my question is, so I'm generally with you on a path towards normalcy, while it will never be normal, just because that seems to be almost the only path. But I do wonder, if you're a football player right now, do you almost need a week to be with your family? Because I actually thought about this. Like, it was really scary to watch, but there was a cognitive dissonance knowing that it wasn't scary for me as a person on the couch.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine, even in this hyper-masculine sport, that there are people who are scared to play football this week. And I don't know if that changes in a week off or if it's just a period of thought and reflection. But I also basically I'm with you. I would declare it a no contest, but I wouldn't take off the table just postponing everything a week. And the reason I say that is I actually think the hard decision was already made to stop that game. That was actually hard for the NFL, no matter how easy it was for us to see it had to happen. Mm-hmm. They had never done that. They had never really done that before.
Right.
And now I don't think that being overly empathetic and taking an extra week and giving up your day on Saturday and Sunday where you are like the TV monster will affect them as much as the fact that you can gain the trust of your players and do almost what's right. And I don't know if that's right. It's just something that I thought about.
So the gain of trust of the players is where you draw a laugh out of me.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to. I just was.
Yeah, I know you weren't trying to, but that's not their concern. I think, and I don't mean to vilify the league or Roger or Troy Vincent or anybody. I think they have priorities. I think the players are on that list, but they are not as high as we would expect them to be. And
but
so
if there's ever a moment, wouldn't now be the moment that it'd be like, hey, you guys are the priority?
At what cost, though?
Yeah, like, I guess that billions of dollars.
No, it's not. No, this I'd love for that to be the case, but no, it's not, because the cost for them is, I don't know how to calculate it, but it seems pretty great. I think there was one scenario that we didn't consider is postpone everything a week and still not make up the game, which is, I think, kind of what you were putting on the table.
Yeah.
I think that's really unlikely.
Yeah, definitely the least likely scenario, but something that I thought.
Yeah. To the first point that you were making is like what it must be like for the players in this situation. And I don't know. It was interesting. Like bringing up the 9/11 thing is interesting because at least for the first few hours after that, you were in D.C. at the time and people who are in New York at the time, even more so because like the Pentagon got hit, which is in Virginia, but it's a D.C. area. The reason why I think that's an interesting thing to bring up is because that's probably the closest you can get, any of us can get who aren't football players, who aren't active football players, to understanding what they must feel like. Yeah. Because in those hours afterwards, we didn't know, you know, and you felt like anything could happen to any of us anywhere. And maybe not like in the middle of the country, but for people who are in DC and New York, we were kind of like, what the F?
Yeah.
Like, what is really happening right now? I was at Maryland at the time, and they canceled practice, University of Maryland, which is 20 minutes from D.C. They canceled practice. They canceled that week of games and all that stuff. But I remember, thinking, oh, I don't know, being a little bit, unsure. And so I bring that up because the players, all of them, and we talk so much about how good athletes are at compartmentalizing, and football players are compartmentalizing, and I've seen it before. And that's why, you know me long enough to know that when coaches start talking about this player is a distraction or we don't want any distractions, I say it's hogwash. It's just some language that coaches use because they just want more control.
Right.
Because I've been on teams where players had parents die, had siblings die, had love triangles with their teammates, and it lead to tension in the locker rooms where guys had fist fights with each other on the airplane. And all that stuff can be compartmentalized because none of that stuff's on the field. The hard thing about compartmentalizing this and moving forward is it's right in the middle of the compartment.
Right.
Like, it is doing the thing that you do. So I don't know how you compartmentalize just the thought, because, and I think this goes to the point of us pointing out that it felt like a routine play.
Yeah.
You couldn't flag anybody for what happened. And you can't change the way you play to make it safer. So
it felt like a non-violent play in a violent sport.
The next time we have a football play, any football play, it's going to be on the player's mind. Because it's not like the next time someone goes for a big catch over the middle and a safety's coming for him, or the next time a quarterback gets blindsided. No. It's the next time any football play happens, it's going to be on the players' minds until there's some other explanation given that, like, puts the players at ease. Like, if we learn that there was some other complication, some other pre-existing condition, some other element that is the reason why this happened, and we can check. I know Ryan Clark talks a lot about how he has the sickle cell trait, and playing at altitude, he almost lost his life. I also have the sickle cell trait, something that quite a few Black people have. And I played in Denver for 3 years, and I didn't know about Ryan's issue, and I didn't know that I was at higher risk until after I got traded to Atlanta. And I say that because it wasn't in my mind, you know?
Yeah.
And like, while I was playing with that risk, and I never, fortunately, whatever happened in Ryan's body never happened in mine. So I never had to be confronted with the life or death situation, but I don't know what I would have thought in that situation. So that's for all the players, not just the Bills. Every single football player, when they go play again, college, pro, whatever, they're going to be like, oh, I don't know. Like, there's going to be some trepidation. But for the Bills specifically, I think we want to talk about the NFL as one thing, and we want to talk about the Bills as one thing, and like say, this is how the Bills feel.
Yeah.
And this is what the Bills want, and this is what's best for the Bills. And it's not. There's 50 plus players and a bunch of coaches, and I promise you that not everyone feels the same way. I promise you that are some players who are thinking right now, I really just want to focus on winning this Super Bowl. I can't do anything about anything else. What will make me feel better is playing these games and being number one seed and winning the championship. That will make me feel best. And I'm sure there are guys who are like, I don't ever want to put on a helmet again. And there's a bunch of guys in between there. So that also complicates how we think about doing what's best in this situation, because what's best for one player or person is not what's best for everyone.
And so what I follow up with that is, I totally get that. And I've thought about that a lot. It's like, basically, even, you know, people in the organization who know the players well, like, this is everyone's going to react to this somewhat differently. And some people want normalcy, some people want different things. But the question I have about compartmentalizing is, does fairness even really matter right now? Like, well, in these players who can compartmentalize and play football and separate these things, does the concept of being 13-3 versus 14-3, or having to be the 2 seed and play a game a week earlier, is that nearly as important to them as it was a week ago? And will they think about that on the Super Bowl run? Because I was thinking about it, it's like, probably not. Like, if you're a supremely confident athlete, once you get there, you're not really thinking about your seed as much. You're just playing the game. And like, I almost wonder if I've been fantasy football brained, because I know that this was the last week of the fantasy playoffs. So I was like, do these games have to happen for X, Y, and Z? And it's like, do they at all? Does that matter to these players? Does that matter to the organizations as much?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to what I was just saying. It's different for different players.
Yeah.
And I think by and large, I think it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it matters more, probably in part because of what happened to them. And if there was like some extreme weather event, or if there was some like, I don't know, a terrorist threat, some other reason that canceled the game, and then the players, as a result, they could not make up the game and they were hurt by this, their standing was hurt by this, I think guys would be upset, but they would say at some point they would come to the understanding that, like, it was out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the other end of that is like, something happened. There was a traumatic event that happened to a person on their team and also happened to them. And the result of that event is not only that he's fighting for his life, but that we get punished for something that we worked for since training camp, and honestly, it's since before training camp.
Yeah.
This is windows for winning championships are not eternal.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to win a championship, and everyone wants to get to NFL, and everyone, this may be their best opportunity. And I know it's irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, but I don't think that's how they think, because I don't think that's how anybody thinks. You know, like, yeah, you don't think like I have to have this or that.
And it's not irrelevant. Like, people care about what they do and what they've worked for their entire life. Like, that's important.
Yeah. And I've talked before about how one of my teammates in Denver was killed the following year. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of conversation, which upset me, but I think maybe gave other people purpose. But it was a lot of conversation about like doing this for him and like dedicating this to him. And like, he would really want to be here, and we need to make the best of this opportunity because he's not here. There was a lot of that, and it didn't sit right with me, but it maybe it was a way that other people dealt with it. I can imagine that there are people on this team who are like, man, we really got to win the Super Bowl now.
Mm-hmm.
And we really got to stay focused for him, because while I'm feeling this pain and I don't want to be sitting in this meeting room right now, I don't want to be practicing, I don't want to be playing games, DeMar Hamlin and his family would give anything for him to be here right now too.
Right.
And I don't think that's not, I don't think that's not the way my brain would work in a situation like this. I'd be more likely to like, just like turtle up and be like, I don't care about any of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not saying that is right or wrong, or I'm proud of it or embarrassed by it. But I think that there are a lot of players who are more proactive and like want to go out and like do this for him, and not even do it for him, do it for themselves. They like feel like that's all you can do. So, yeah, I think this is an impossible situation to get right. I don't think there is a way to get this right.
Yeah,
there's no right way to do any of this.
And then I think we're near the close on what we know now and what we can say now as we're speculating, but we haven't heard from Roger Goodell. And my last question is, this is a huge dilemma for him ethically versus financially versus what's fair for the league and the teams. Is, do you think we need to hear from him soon? Do you expect to hear from him soon? And what can, is there a way that he could handle this that actually helps?
No, this is one of those situations where you're trying to, like they say about the president, the big problem, only big problems get to his desk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel that same way about Roger in this situation. Is you're looking for the best of bad options. So yeah, there's no scenario that is like, oh, that was the move. You mm-hmm. did it right. Everyone's happy. Like, this is, there's no scenario where this works out well. And also, like, DeMar Hamlin's health is not in Roger Goodell's control. Right. What happens with his health is going to impact the way we all feel about this more than any decision that Roger Goodell makes. He could bungle all of this stuff and do it all the wrong way. But if DeMar Hamlin can walk out on the field at the Super Bowl, whether the Bills are there or not, and wave to the fans, that'll be it'll feel like a win.
Yeah.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, that is that, I guess. There is no graceful transition from that to the other story that I thought it was important we talk about, but I think we should talk about Dana White's domestic violence incident with his wife, Anne, at a nightclub in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. If you saw the TMZ video, Anne hit Dana, and then he slapped her back, looked like a couple, two or three times. And then he, once the story got out, and it kind of seemed like the story came out and the video came out in conjunction with Dana's like explanation for it. He like took responsibility in the way that you can take responsibility. Or, I mean, I don't know.
They're both on TMZ. Their video is released. And shortly after, White was interviewed by TMZ and he apologized. And his wife said it was not in character and alcohol fueled, et cetera.
Yeah. I guess that's the point I was trying to make is before I saw the video and before I read up on it, I'd heard people talking about Dana blaming alcohol, but it wasn't him that blamed the alcohol. Was his wife. And to be clear, Dana White, if you don't know who he is, he's the president of UFC. And I guess also like,
the only consistent face of the UFC as fighters come and go quickly. Seems that anyone who gets a loss is forgotten, whether it's anyone but Conor McGregor, whether it's Silva or Ronda Rousey. Dana White has been there from the beginning. He has been sort of the circus conductor of the UFC.
The thing that I think is important to say about this is his wife shouldn't have hit him, but that doesn't matter to me. So like, I feel like that's the strand that needs to be addressed. I think there's no reasonable person who believes that domestic violence is okay and you can defend it. I think that there are people who think that, well, if she hit me first, it's okay.
Right.
Which I think that, there's this thing about responsibility, in my view, and in power, and it's not only about violence. Like, there's more expected of people with more power, and Dana White has more power in like the traditional sense, as far as he's a president of UFC and he's like famous and rich and all that stuff, but also like he's physically more powerful and like stronger and. And, if someone thinks that, if people believe that his wife, Anne, needs to face some sort of repercussions for, hitting Dana, I mean, sure, I don't care. I'm not going to jump on like in the middle of that, but if I just don't want anyone to think that Dana White does not deserve some repercussions and some consequences for retaliating in the way that he did.
Right.
Because, I don't want to trivialize this in any way, but like there's different expectations for people who have different amount of power and physical strength. It's like it's yeah, And I don't know how else to put it. I don't think there's much to debate. There's much to discuss other than that point. Is there anything else in this that you think we need to address?
I mean, a lot of people. So this story has been drastically undercovered a lot. And I think people look at the gradations of that. He didn't knock his wife out like Ray Rice, which I think is the wrong way to look at the story. But I think that's popped up online.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, people have looked at that there could be ignominious reasons why it's not been covered as much because of partnerships with different networks, because of connections with UFC to whether it's WME or ESPN or different pay-per-view events. I think you're right. That's important to just spotlight this because Dana White, people are old takes exposing and talking about his comments about Ray Rice in 2014 and how he said that there was a zero tolerance policy for domestic violence, but then he signed Greg Hardy, re-signed Thiago Silva. And it seemed that he just thought value to the company was enough with the slap on the wrist. And I'm not like a UFC fan. I understand that there's an implicit buy-in of that you're sort of buying into something gross and violent and not ethical when you become a fan or a watcher of it. So I don't know what the right path is for, but I do think it's important that if it's someone who's this powerful, that we've learned over the past years, holding people in power accountable is important to just shine a spotlight that he did this and it's getting undercovered and a lot of people don't know. And he should be held responsible.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like you, am not like a big UFC fan. So it feels a little weird to mosey in and tell people how to run it, but also somebody needs to talk about it. And they are, I don't know how mainstream it is, but like it's you don't get to explain it away by saying, but it's mixed martial arts. This is MMA. This is different. Mm-hmm. I don't know that people are explaining it that way, but I do feel that air around this where it's like, no, it's a little different. Like Dana White shouldn't be held because if I don't want to name anybody specifically, but if someone else who ran a major sport, any of the major sports, which is what UFC aspires to be, if anyone else who ran a major sport had a video like this, it wouldn't be flying under the radar the way this Dana White thing is, and something would be done and something would there'd be some there'd be consequences for it. And I think even though I'm not like some super UFC fan, I think that it's fair for all of us to expect Dana White to pay some consequences for his actions.
And to be clear, genuinely neither of us know exactly what to do because people say this all the time that no one is bigger than their sport, but he sort of is that sport in a certain way. And like, not to break it down that way, but his value is completely unique to the product that he helped create and popularize. And we'd be crazy to say that that's not being considered when this is being covered. But we'd also be crazy to ignore it because he's powerful, because that'd be the exact wrong way to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he said a lot of the right things, but I think he needs to take action. Like, I think that's the best thing that he can do, because I guess who would punish him if he's not going to face like charges in the court of law? Like, who is the body that will punish him? I guess WME, who owns UFC, could punish him, or I mean, like, I guess ESPN is more of a partner than they wouldn't be able. I guess they could behind closed doors call for some sort of action, but they can't like actually inflict any punishment. I think that he needs to go ahead and like take some time off, commit to counseling, give the donations, like do all the things that you're. That you would ask of your athletes. That's that's it.
Before we go, we can tease slight tone change here, but we are going to have fun episodes next week where we talk more about the NFL and NFL award season and the playoffs. So we were serious today because we really care about this stuff, but we also care about you, the audience, and want to talk about football and fun stuff and laugh together soon.
All right. Thank you guys. This has been a different week for sports, and I appreciate Everyone for sticking with us. And yeah, I think things will be closer to normal next week. And I look forward to getting back to that. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks, Sarah Abbott. Thanks, Christina Buswell and Addie Khan. Appreciate you all.
And thank you, Dominic Foxworth, for being the voice of reason this week.
All right, cut that off.
No, leave it in.
Edit it out, Christina.
Leave it in.
Bye.
This is the Dominic Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.